Hello, this is Mary, and I will be reading selections from the News Gazette for Thursday, July 16th, 2026. Beginning with articles on the front page of the paper, Champaign County Court. Witnesses offer myriad accounts of fight, stabbings. Defendant says he pulled knife after being assaulted, by Luke Taylor. Urbana. A series of stabbing victims each testified in a trial Wednesday, sharing their accounts of the fight that led to all of their injuries. The man who allegedly caused all of these injuries by bringing a knife to what was otherwise a fist fight has been charged with 4 counts of attempted homicide. Samuel Garcia, 18, of Arcola, also testified on his own behalf on Wednesday after the state rested, and the defense was able to present much of its case. In general, all witnesses agree that after Garcia arrived at an Urbana residence, where the rest of them were participating in a family cookout, he quickly got into an altercation with several other young men. Garcia said that he'd been going to the house because he was concerned about his daughter, who was born prematurely and had been dealing with a series of health issues. A friend had sent screenshots from FaceTime showing the baby at a house, she said, and Garcia believed to be a Hunter Street location he was familiar with. That same friend had also alleged the residents there consumed and sold cocaine, which Garcia said had him worried. "I didn't judge nobody. It's just that it's my daughter," he said in court. Different witnesses had slightly different accounts of how the fight started, including one who at first said he punched Garcia before Garcia showed a knife, then reversed that. Surveillance video that captured the incident from a distance does appear to show 3 individuals surrounding Garcia and initiating the conflict. However, a phone video, which did not capture the beginning of the fight, appeared to show Garcia at times pursuing other individuals while they backed off him. Garcia's sister and her friend, who drove him to the house with the intention of picking up the baby, both said that as they drove by, people coming out of the house were yelling, "That's them." While Garcia said he didn't realize how dangerous the situation was, his sister said she was worried for him and told him not to get out of the car. He did anyway, so she followed, intending to help, but said she was separated from him when the fighting started. Garcia said he had brought the knife because he was concerned about the house, but wasn't actually expecting a violent encounter. He claimed he only pulled it after being punched, knocked down, and kicked, hoping to scare the others off. "I feel as if any normal person would try to get away if they saw a knife," he said. Garcia also claimed that he was just making swiping motions and didn't realize he actually hit anyone. Each of the victims described their wounds, with some having multiple lacerations to their torsos, and one having another to the back of his head and neck. Another individual who pointed Garcia out to police, leading to his arrest, testified for the defense, describing being involved in the fight before following the defendant away from the scene. He described the knife in question as little and said that Garcia was fighting back against a good number of assailants. The defense is expected to wrap up its case this morning, after which the jury will begin deliberations. Also on the front page, Tom Jones Challenger League, mounds of enjoyment. Usually the one doing the talking, local entrepreneur Mike Namoff was at a loss for words when surprised with the Lifetime Achievement Award by organizers of the Tom Jones Challenger League. "It's weird, in a way, to get an award," he said. "I love making others feel happy and good. This was definitely a special moment for me." For more than a decade, Namoff has raised funds and awareness, not to mention pitched a ton of innings, for a league that gives kids facing physical and mental challenges an opportunity to play baseball. He was back on the mound at Tuesday's All-Star Games at Eichelberger Field in Urbana, having the time of his life while interacting with players he's gotten to know over the years. Volunteering has made me comfortable with the uncomfortable, Namoff said. The kids have accepted me. Namoff, 56, never met the late Tom Jones, but likes to make him proud. I want to go to bed at night saying, man, we did something good today. We made somebody smile. Among Namoff's fundraising goals, help the league in its quest for a turf field. I think I'm living in purpose now, helping others, Namoff said. I don't get tired. I'm relentless, and I'm having fun. And there's a photo in the paper of Mike Namoff using his phone to video those taking part in the Tuesday's Tom Jones Challenger All-Star League game in Urbana. Also on the front page of the paper, Village of Rantoul, Election 2026. Are we a democracy or not? Cannabis advisory question, at-large voting proposal will appear on the ballot. By Jana Wiersma. Rantoul. Village residents will see two questions on the ballot in November. One is an advisory question asking if the cannabis business should be allowed in Rantoul. The other is a binding referendum to ask if residents want to switch back to electing trustees on an at-large basis rather than by district. While district trustees unanimously agreed to put the advisory question on cannabis establishments on the ballot, the binding referendum on trustee election methods was more divisive. Trustees Terry Workman, Gary Wilson, Mike Graham, and Louise Haynes voted this week to put the binding referendum on the ballot, while Donald Robertson and Regina Kreider were against the move. At-large voting rewards who you already know, not who's trying to get a seat at the table for the first time, Kreider said. She added that voters already settled the matter in a previous referendum, and she feels that going back to at-large voting is more likely to cause problems than to fix them. Wilson, on the other hand, said that he's not against election by district, but feels that the voter should have the right to choose. I feel that if we vote this referendum down, that this gives an appearance of a dictatorship, he told his fellow trustees. The referendum on trustee election was put on the agenda at the request of Workman. Village residents previously voted in November 2018 to elect trustees by district by a margin of approximately 54% to 46%. The first trustees to be elected in this manner were sworn in on May 4, 2021, officials said. This isn't the first time Workman has tried to put a question on the ballot about returning to the old method of electing trustees. His last petition was voted down by the Rantoul Election Board in January 2025. A 2023 petition was okayed by the Election Board, but barred by the court. Sixth Circuit Judge Ben Dyer found at the time that the statutory four-year window had yet to pass based on when the trustees took office. Prior to the village board's vote, seven people offered their thoughts on the two referendums during the time for public comment. Most of these individuals expressed support for putting the advisory question on cannabis businesses on the ballot, but urged the village board not to reopen the matter of how trustees are elected. Tanisha Calloway said that switching back to at-large could result in every trustee coming from the same part of town with the same experiences, the same background, and the same blind spots. Good decisions come from hearing different perspectives, not just everyone agreeing because everyone's the same, she said. Districts are what guarantee that this board actually hears from all of Rantoul, not just the loudest or largest part of it. However, Calloway said she would like to see a dispensary in Rantoul and said that it would bring income to the city while also making cannabis more accessible to people who use it for pain relief. He added that the current system could result in a situation where an incompetent individual runs for trustee and wins because there is no one else in their district that is interested in running. Philip Davis, continuing to say that if people such as Callaway want to have a say on cannabis, residents should also have the choice to decide whether or not trustees should be elected at large. Are we a democracy or are we not? All right, you are the ones who speak for us, he told the trustees. That is correct. But if we don't put this on the ballot, then we're taking away the option for me to decide. In regards to cannabis, the board previously passed an ordinance in 2019 banning a variety of adult-use cannabis business establishments from operating in Rantoul, including dispensaries, craft growers, and cultivation centers. The advisory referendum was on the board at Robertson's request. Wilson agreed that voters should have a say in the matter, though he personally is critical of having such businesses in Rantoul. I don't agree with funding the village through marijuana sales and alcohol sales and gaming sales because there's a lot more underlying problems, he said. For medical purposes, yes, I understand that. But I just think we ought to be a little bit smarter with our budgeting and spending versus having to worry about how many millions of dollars we're putting in gaming machines and cannabis sales just to fund our village. I just don't think that's morally correct. Graham later noted that even if most people vote yes on the question, it is still only an advisory referendum. It has to come back to the board for authorization in the village, he said. He added that if that were to happen, residents shouldn't expect a new dispensary to open right away, as getting a state license can be difficult. I'm putting it in the people's hands if it passes, Haynes said. Turning to page 2 of the July 16th News Gazette. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy Vice President Jim Russo. Last year's Volunteer of the Year was back at it Tuesday night, pitching in at Tom Jones Challenger League All-Star Game at Eichelberger Field. Talented photographer Craig Pessman said he enjoys giving the kids and families good photos and always is willing to help us, too. Good folks like Pessman are at the heart of a league that continues to grow, heading into year 30. Among the community difference makers recognized Tuesday in Urbana, Coach of the Year, Hunter Birch, Sparks Award, Molly Dotson, Jason Iman, David Reif, and Angie Wilson. Volunteer of the Year, University of Illinois Athletic Department Grounds Crew. And the Lifetime Achievement Award, Mike Namoff, the story of which was read from page A1. Interested in helping out for next season? Email tjclvolunteer@gmail.com. History. Area history. In 1926, approximately 75 union members working on the new library at the University of Illinois laid down their tools at noon after a strike order was issued by the Illinois Trades Council, affiliated with the American Federation of Labor. A reconciliation meeting with the university is not yet scheduled. The council alleges that Reliable Heating and Plumbing Company is unfair to organized labor because it has employed non-union steam fitters. In 1976, a survey of farm fields in Illinois shows the corn crop already damaged by the weather in some west-central sections and corn and soybeans seriously threatened in many other areas. The survey indicates that Illinois could still produce good corn and soybean crops, but it would require rain in the next few days, and then more rain every week, or 10 days, through August. In 2011, the University of Illinois trustees could end the Institute of Aviation next week, but not without a dogfight. On Friday afternoon, the UI Board of Trustees added a proposed resolution to close the Institute to their previously posted agenda for the Thursday meeting. Interim Aviation Director Tom Emanuel said he was surprised when he learned it was on the agenda because the Faculty Senate appeared to support keeping it open and has never had a decisive vote on the issue. Emanuel argued that the decision was being made at the wrong level. International history. Today's highlight. On July 16, 1945, the United States detonated its first experimental atomic bomb in the desert of Alamogordo, New Mexico. The same day, the heavy cruiser USS Indianapolis left Mare Island Naval Shipyard in California on a secret mission to deliver atomic bomb components to Tinian Island in the Marianas. On this date, in 1790, a site along the Potomac River was designated the permanent seat of the United States government. That area became Washington, D.C. In 1862, Flag Officer David G. Farragut became the first Rear Admiral in the United States Navy. In 1951, the novel Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger was first published by Little, Brown, and Company. Turning to page 6, Our Communities. Teacher of the Week, Louisiana Hernandez, social worker, Urbana High School. Role playing. During her family's trip to Mexico this summer, two of Louisiana Hernandez's students from 19 years ago reached out to her. They saw a picture of me being in Mexico and asked if I could meet with them. And of course I made it work, said Hernandez, who taught Spanish language arts at Urbana Middle School from 2005 to 2008. They live in Mexico. It is crazy that they are now 33 years old and were really excited to see me and share how I impacted their lives. Hernandez's impact on students has changed since those two students took her class. Now she's a social worker at Urbana High School, where she has been for 4 years. I find my work important because I'm able to help students and families navigate the school system, connect them with the community, and also help with mental health. I became a social worker because of my own experiences as I was growing up. Growing up, I wanted to be a teacher, nurse, or a psychologist. I had great experiences with these roles in my own life. I tried all three at some capacity, but it didn't really fulfill what I really wanted. Little did I know, as a school social worker, I'm all of the above. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, I love having students reflect on positive things when they come in, upset about a situation, and teaching them what they have control over. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when students see me in the hallway and either hug me or just greet me, and seeing student growth on things we work on during our sessions. I keep students engaged by, I explore their interests, and I try to keep it in mind to try to incorporate it into our sessions. Sometimes I bring their favorite snack, play their favorite music in the background, or paint pictures. Something I'm passionate about is connecting with my colleagues and helping out whenever I can. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was, my favorite teacher was Mr. Butt at Drexel School when I was in sixth grade, who taught math. Child development was my favorite subject. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a nurse or run a daycare center. I'm spending my summer traveling to Mexico with my family. I'm also brainstorming on how to reorganize my office to make it more comfortable and appealing to my students. I'm not really good at decorating. Interview conducted by Anthony Zillis. Do you know of a superstar? Email Teacher of the Week nominations to Anthony Zillis at azillis@news-gazette.com. Also on page A6, opinion by Jim Day. Court chastised for attempt to dodge defamation damage decision. What is defamation per se, and more importantly, what is it worth? That is a tough question. Getting the answer wrong garnered LaSalle County Judge Jason Helland a beatdown from a state's appeals court and an order to revisit the issue of how much money is due an emergency room doctor defamed by a former patient. Five categories of statement constitute defamation per se, two of which came to the fore in the lawsuit filed by Dr. William Sullivan. The two are a statement that imputes a person has committed a crime and one that a person is unable to perform or lacks integrity in performing his job. Here's what happened. In January 2022, Sullivan was on emergency room duty in St. Margaret's Hospital in the Bureau County Community of Spring Valley. That's when Allison Scheinman sought treatment for severe abdominal pain, perhaps associated with colitis. That's a chronic or acute inflammation of the inner lining of the large intestine. After conducting a physical examination, he recommended performing a rectal exam to assess for the presence of blood or mucus. With a nurse present, Sullivan conducted the exam without incident. But when he left the exam room, Scheinman complained that he had performed an unnecessary exam in a rough manner. She filed multiple complaints, including with the Spring Valley Police Department, alleging the doctor had sexually assaulted her. Then she took to Facebook, where she repeated her sexual assault charge and warned the public to avoid Sullivan. "Do not go there. This man is violent and aggressive. Please don't let your loved ones near him or his hospital," she wrote. After reviewing the matter, the police took no action on Scheinman's claim, and professional reviewers found no wrongdoing on Sullivan's part. Sullivan's nurse proved to be his strongest witness. But Sullivan was crushed by what occurred, particularly the Facebook statement that was reportedly read by 15,000 people. Testimony revealed he had trouble sleeping, felt humiliated and worried that Scheinman's attack would alienate his patients. Ultimately, he filed a defamation lawsuit, and after a 4-day trial, the judge ruled in Sullivan's favor and against Scheinman and two others associated with the Facebook post. That's when the case went off the rails. The judge admitted he had no idea how to determine damages. He noted that Sullivan noted no adverse professional consequences as a result of the defamation, only mental anguish. "There were times, many times, when I just thought, wow, there's an unsettled area of law. Thanks for the guidance, appellate court," the judge said. Befuddled by the cash conundrum, the judge awarded Sullivan $1 in nominal damages. The 3-judge appellate court panel was not impressed. The law does not provide a calculator for per se reputational harm, but neither does it permit the court to throw up its hands and award a dollar, wrote Justice John Anderson. For starters, the appellate court found the award of $1 in nominal damages was incorrect as a matter of law, because such damages are awarded when the insignificant character of the defamatory statement leads the trier of fact to conclude that no substantial harm has been done. In this case, Sullivan was falsely accused of conducting a violent sexual assault under the guise of a medical examination, an allegation that is neither trivial nor inconsequential. Sullivan's lawyer suggested the judge award Sullivan $20 for each of the 15,000 people it took who saw the Facebook post. The appellate court took no position on the propriety of that recommendation, but cited other defamation cases in which low six-figure damages were awarded. "We conclude it is better for the trial judge to make another attempt at that determination," Anderson wrote. Turning to national news on page A4, Clycospora reports, no definitive cause yet for near-record outbreak. Michigan blaming lettuce and greens. New York, AP. Infections from the diarrhea-causing parasite Cyclospora are surging, with state-level data suggesting that 2026 is already the nation's worst year for reported cases. More than 30 states have reported infections this year, and current data from them shows the number of infections surpassing the record U.S. mark of about 4,700 set in 2019. The illness is not usually life-threatening and is typically treated with antibiotics. Health officials have not yet definitively identified what is causing these infections. On Tuesday, federal health officials said there may be different infection patterns in different places, although they believe cases in at least four states, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia, are linked. In Michigan, where more than 3,300 cases have been reported, officials say early information points to lettuce or salad greens as a possible culprit. After conducting more than 1,000 interviews with patients, early information has shown lettuce as a common product that regularly comes up during the investigation, said Natasha Bagsarian, the Michigan Health Department's chief medical executive. Because of that commonality and because produce has been behind some past cyclospora outbreaks, Michigan officials advise consumers to buy whole heads of lettuce, discard the outer layers, and thoroughly wash what is left. They also suggested people avoid bagged lettuce and pre-mixed salad kits. On Tuesday, the Taco Bell restaurant chain issued a statement saying it had voluntarily and temporarily removed limited ingredients at select restaurants as a precautionary measure. We will continue to monitor the situation and follow the guidance of public health authorities. In a call with reporters, federal health officials did not directly respond to a question about whether they are looking at Taco Bell or any other food vendor or distributor. FDA certainly is continuing its traceback investigation on multiple produce items, including locations that are reported by the case patients before they became sick, said Donald Prater, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's acting deputy commissioner for food, in response. Cyclospora is a microscopic spherical parasite that commonly causes watery diarrhea with frequent and sometimes explosive bowel movements, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Outbreaks tend to occur most often in the late spring and summer. The heat-loving parasite infects the bowels and spreads through feces. In the past, people have been infected by consuming fruits or vegetables that were exposed to feces-contaminated irrigation water. The illness, called cyclosporiasis, is less common than food-borne illnesses caused by other germs, including Salmonella and E. coli. Many cases are never linked to a specific food or other source, and for years, few U.S. cyclospora outbreaks were reported. Outbreak in Congo. Health workers strike as Ebola causes surge. Bunia, Congo, AP. The number of confirmed cases of Ebola in Congo has reached 2,011, including 754 deaths, according to government data released overnight in what authorities say is the fastest-growing outbreak on record. Health workers at Bunia General Hospital, the region's largest medical center, went on strike Wednesday and are the latest group to walk off the job at the epicenter of overpayment issues. Health professionals and other frontline workers barricaded the entrance to the hospital, claiming they have not received pay despite working under difficult conditions. The World Health Organization says more than 100 healthcare workers have been infected since the beginning of the outbreak. The Central African nation has been battling the Ebola outbreak caused by the rare Bundibugyo virus since May 15th. A total of 753 patients remain in isolation or in hospital, while 366 have recovered so far, according to data from Congo's Ministry of Health. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the News Gazette from Thursday, July 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned.